Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. 34 minutes after the hour on this Friday morning. Text me, and we'll try to work in a text or two before the show concludes. But obviously, some of you writing essays this morning, probably won't have time for those. We'll do our best. But it's 251-343-0106. Joining us on the line now, we do this every Friday about this time, kind of way to wind down the week, but we hear from the show's returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. Great to be back in South Baldwin County after a long week, some of which was in Montgomery. It's been a very busy week.
How you feeling about the session? I suppose it seems like it does seem like there's some buzz out there, but man, it's being overshadowed by a lot of other things going on, and maybe you have a different, a clearer vision of what we are to expect.
Well, we're starting to get a little myopic, as you might expect, as we, you know, narrow down and get started. But I'm excited about the session. There's some kind of unfinished business that's been laying out there that is more on the conservative side that I think the Senate's going to take up early on in the session. So I'm looking forward to dealing with that. I know you've heard some comments from Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth and others. We're going to, I think, early on start pushing some of those bills, everything from, you know, ballot harvesting issues and to dealing with libraries and archives and history and, you know, all these types of things. So those bills will move quickly and early in the session, and I'm pretty pleased with that.
Well, that's the problem that a lot of times, and you know, it's not always like this, but when you want to get something controversial through, you do have the gums, you know, the works gummed up by the Democrat opposition. And it sounds like, based on Governor Ainsworth's comments, that maybe we're going to maybe see something a little different this time around.
Well, I think so. And y'all, you know, 1819's written about this before. You know, the Dems have gummed up effectively the process before. And I think there's, you know, a little bit of an attitude change here. You know, we have a supermajority in both the House and the Senate, and it's time to take it out for a spin and use it. And so that's what I anticipate that we'll be doing the first couple of weeks. I think the House is going to be wrangling with the gaming legislation. We'll see what comes out of that. Hopefully the Senate will have passed, you know, most of all of the, you know, the priority legislation that deals with, again, some more conservative issues and have it down to the House in the first week or two. That'll move very quickly. And then we'll have, you know, the balance of the session to deal with whatever the House does send up on gaming, and then a number of other, you know, important issues to include budgets and supplementals and other good government issues like that.
What I know we talked about this last week, but any change in movement or change in tone or change in trajectory on the gambling stuff? Because what sounds like we had a bunch of hard nose, and maybe some of that softening a little based on what's being kind of leaked out.
Well, I think it's a wait and see approach. I mean, it really is. And where are we going to go from here depends a lot on not only what gets introduced in the House, but what passes the House, if it passes the House. And so myself and some of our colleagues are watching but are not getting too terribly involved in the nitty-gritty of it, because you kind of have to wait and see what they do to make a determination on what's okay and what's not. I will say, I think we talked about this last week, I'm encouraged that the authors of this current legislation seem to have at least looked at the work that the Senate has done on this issue in the past, realized that there has been some progress made. There's some pitfalls that have been identified, and they seem to have taken that into account when drafting this legislation. So it's not like it's something that we're going to have to redraft if and when it does come upstairs in order to move the ball. But I still think there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of challenges for the legislation upstairs. I mean, again, the most notable of which is the champions of gaming legislation in the Senate are gone and just aren't there this quadrennium. And so you gotta do the old vote count and see where you are on the concept first before you ever get into the details.
Well, that's just it, right? Like, I don't have a – well, what is the temperature in the room in the Senate? Because there's it seems like there's a lot more question marks than there had been with some of the new members. I mean, last time around, I could talk to a couple of members to kind of get a sense of, like, who the yeses and noes were and who were the hell noes and who were the hell yeses. Now – that number's not as certain. Do you have a sense that, like, what is the mood of the chamber to do something here?
I don't see anyone jumping up and down saying this is a we got to pass it, we got to make this happen. I think it is very much a wait and see, you know, attitude of let's see what the House does, and then we will. Then and if you know they do something, then we'll look at it. So I think the temperature is low to medium low, even simmer. Just wait and see.
Well, because I don't see anybody except maybe Senator Albritton, but he's running for Congress right now, who would be like, let's hurry up and get this done. Like, you know, very proactive, very excited, very, you know, cheering it on. It seems like most everybody is either no, or like you are, or like you say, a lot of people are, let's wait and see what happens here. But I think you need at least a little bit of energy on in the upper chamber to get this really moving. And I don't know where that's going to come from.
I don't either. And I'll tell you right now, the energy in the Senate is focused on passing conservative legislation that our voters are absolutely clamoring for. And so we're going to start off the session doing that.
So we're going to, I mean, do you think we're going to see a lot of it go? Well, let me ask you this. Are you getting any signals from downstairs that, you know, other than gambling, because that's where a lot of the talk is, that they're kind of on board with the passing the baton to them and running with it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think leadership's focus in the House is gaming. They've you know made that clear. I think that a lot of the bills, frankly, that we'll be considering early on, are bills that have originated in the House previously and that we have failed to pass. So I don't mind owning that. We should have passed them, but we're going to do that, I think, early in this session. So they should be very excited about that and ready to take them up when they get downstairs. You know, bills that deal with libraries and the Archives and History Board and other things like that I'll be carrying will, I think, you know, just like any other piece of legislation, worked through, got House sponsors and ready to go with them. The key is just to get them out of the Senate early on, down to the House, so that they're ready to go once and if they conclude with gaming. And I hope that whether this goes or not, the gaming legislation, I hope that we know the answer to that early in the session instead of it taking months and months and just dominating the session. I don't want it to do that.
Well, here's another question for you. You and I talk about this all the time, but I believe that Kay Ivey has a lot of political capital that she has banked. She won her election big. She has a high approval rating. She may not do much, and that may be why, because people kind of like out of sight, out of mind. And if you're not screwing it up in Alabama, then you can succeed in some polls. But the question I have is like, well, she's got all this political capital. Do you think we're going to see her use some of it this year?
Not on gaming. I really don't. I think she's going to let the House do what they want to do and then see where the Senate is on it. You know, my history here going into, I guess this is sixth year in the legislature, is that the governor doesn't really weigh in on those. If she's got an opinion on it, she'll weigh in at the end. You know, through an executive amendment or discussions during the conference committee or something like that. But, you know, she's not weighed in on a lot of things early on, you know, unless it was, you know, some prison issues or some, you know, the gas tax. But other than that, she's waited towards the end. And I expect her to do the same thing here. She doesn't want to get in a spot where she puts a lot of political capital on something that doesn't work. She wants to make sure that the details are ironed out first, and that's a reasonable approach. She's got some other issues that are near and dear to me, like consolidating some of the administrative functions of all these boards and eliminating waste, and we're working together on issues like that, at the beginning of the session. But these other controversial, complicated issues, I expect her to weigh in at the end, if at all.
Yeah, because when the governor wants something done in the legislature, you're getting a special session probably a lot of times.
Correct.
And she's going to
– correct.
And there's no sense that she's going to do that. There was a little buzz about that early, but I don't know where that was coming from. Or it's like you said, it comes like in weird times, like a week after the session. Well, what would you have liked to have seen done? We're going to make Alabama the most school choice friendly state in the country or something like that. Well, like, where was this like 3 months ago, you know? So, but I guess it's just what we've come to learn and come to expect. And we haven't really seen anything to tell us that that's going to be the case this time around, is it?
No, that's correct. I mean, I haven't seen, the governor's school choice legislation or whatever she's proposing. I imagine it will be markedly different from the Price Act, which is about the purest form that you can get. And I think there's the interest in passing some school choice legislation. The governor seems to be, saying all the right things, but doing it is quite different.
I don't think the Price Act could pass in Alabama, at least not right now. Do you think that's probably accurate?
I think that's entirely accurate, and I think that the reasoning for that is really the education policy chairs, are in both the House and Senate just don't seem to like that legislation, and they're in a position to kill that legislation, or at least to delay it. We've seen it before to the point where it just doesn't move, and so at least for this quadrennium, if that's the if those folks stay where they are, which I think they will, the likelihood of the Price Act or something substantially similar to it succeeding is pretty low.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, I'll get mentioned to this, and you sent me this, but Baldwin County, one of the you had to look on the a map of Alabama where gridlock was an issue. It may not be – Baldwin County may not be the worst, but it's probably top five, I would think, of counties with infrastructure problems, capacity problems, if you will, people getting from point A to point B. And you shared with me this, like kind of the to-do list from the Alabama Department of Transportation. There's a handful of like notable projects, repaving projects, nothing that is going to expand capacity on any of the really, really overburdened roads in Baldwin County.
Yeah, and that's disappointing. I mean, one of the things I spend a lot of time and energy on in the legislature is making sure that we have adequate transportation funding being spent in Baldwin County. And I'll tell you right now that if you look on a county-by-county basis, Baldwin County receives more state transportation dollars than any other county in the state. And that's as it should be because of the growth, because of the visitors, and because of the economic driver that is Baldwin County. But that also means that we have to be ready to do new projects. We have to have them teed up and ready to go, because when we fight for this funding, there has to be a project on which to put it, right? You have to have, you can't play catch if you don't have somebody catching. And so, you got the money, where do you put it? And when we come to budget supplementals and we come to transportation projects and earmarks even from the feds, it's important to have those projects ready to go. In the last supplemental, Mobile had the port and Mobile had the airport, both of which received significant funding. It's incumbent upon us in Baldwin County and our local leaders in particular, and especially the Baldwin County Commission, to make sure that we have those types of projects teed up and ready to go. And, I sat through this presentation the other day with a county engineer, and it struck me there wasn't a single capacity improvement project in the upcoming year's, scope of work. And that's troubling. As a former commissioner and former chairman of the county commission, one of the things I worked on was making sure we had those capacity improvement projects teed up and ready to go. I signed the agreement on the 181 widening. I signed the agreement on the 31 widening. Those are, on the canal road widening part one and part two on the addition of 181 and making sure that money was all cobbled together and ready to go from different sources. And we are just now, some 7 years later, seeing the results of that as those projects start to complete on the Eastern Shore and start to begin down at the beach on Canal Road. It just takes so long to make, you know, to get those projects going and get them completed that skipping a year with capacity improvement projects, I think, is really telling. We need to refocus our efforts at the county level and make sure that we have those projects in the pipeline and ready to go. And that's a constant effort that's required of our local elected officials.
Senator, I want to get you a chance to respond to our buddy Josh Moon of Alabama Political Reporter. I didn't realize this until I read this, but somehow the actions of one Bernard Abney, a convicted rapist here lately, were somehow your fault. Am I reading that properly? I don't know. It seems a little far-fetched, but maybe I am just a product of Alabama schools, so I don't know.
Yeah, if you're looking at the op-ed that Josh wrote, you know, look, Josh and I don't agree on much, but I am particularly disagree with his op-ed here, where he seems to blame legislators and lawmakers for, you know, the situation with Bernard Abney, again, a convicted rapist who was released on early release. He was put back in prison, as he should be. You know, Josh contends he wasn't released on early release. That's factually inaccurate. And then he goes on to say these lawmakers, including myself, just don't know what they're doing and are, you know, just adding it for the soundbite. You know, I'm interested to get to the bottom of what is going on with these issues. And I talk, you know, to folks that know about that, whether it's the Attorney General's office, whether it's our local law enforcement, heck, whether it's the Appleseed Project and Carla Crowder or Cam Ward from the Bureau of Pardons and Paroles. Where did this fail? What is not working here? And how do we need to fix it? And what Josh fails to realize is that all of those folks I just mentioned, even the folks that like to let prison out of jail are people out of prison early, don't like bad people getting out of jail and bad people getting out of prison when they know they're going to reoffend, because it hurts their cause too. So we've got to look at what's happening in prisons. And if you're being bad in prison, you ought to be prosecuted for the crimes you commit in prison. And then you don't get to your end of sentence, and then you don't get out and rape and murder and stab people again. It amazes me that these liberals continue to say, you know, like Josh, liberal journalists, and that we need to just let people out of jail, and somehow or another that's going to fix problems. And the fact that they'll just be better when they get out is such a fallacy. It's proven time and time again that it doesn't work.
Well, and we're way along, but here's the other thing that always gets me about these guys at APR when they attack Republicans. You guys are just doing it for a soundbite. You're just pandering. You don't have to do that. You win your elections by big margins. Alabama is a super majority Republican state. It just that doesn't really work, guys. Come up with something better than that, because these guys are not doing this to win elections. They would do that already. It's already built into the system. But anyway, I digress. Enough of that. Senator, thanks for making time for us, and we'll talk again soon.
You got it. Y'all have a great weekend.
All right. State Senator Chris Elliott there. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Moonlight. Hold her up tight. Make a little loving. A little turn of loving on a Mason-Dixon line. Fits my life. Oh, so right. My Dixie.